We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews.
This is Tamara with the local news for Saturday, May 14th, 2016. And go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Diane Valden in the Columbia paper reports that an Ankrum farmer who has been certified organic since 1988 is worried about losing that label if a neighbor is allowed to use pesticides in a pond. Farmer Donald McLean, speaking during an April 21st public hearing on the town's right to farm law, said the proposed law does not address, quote, practices by non-farmers that could adversely affect a farmer's ability to farm, unquote. He's worried about the fruits, berries, and vegetables and grains that grow on his Thompson Finch farm, 750 Wiltsey Bridge Road, because Camp Pontiac wants to apply herbicides and algicides to Lower Rhoda Pond. Camp Pontiac, a sleepaway summer camp at 2044 County Route 7, has applied to the State Department of Environmental Conservation to use several pesticides to control nuisance aquatic vegetation for better swimming and boating. McLean doesn't want those pesticides floating down from Lower Rhoda into the Long Lake and then Roelof Jansen Kill, where he fears it could cost him the approval of the Northeast Organic Farming Association of New York. The DEC is accepting comments on this project at an address on the WGXC newsroom website. The Ankrum Town Board considers the right to farm law at 7 p.m. May 19th. Brian Nearing in Capital Confidential reports that on May 13th, State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman's office asked the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, to delay action on its December 2014 approval of the 125-mile Constitution Pipeline. Last month, the State Department of Environmental Conservation denied environmental permits to the project, which would bring natural gas to Schoharie County from Pennsylvania. Schneiderman also urged FERC to consider fining the company up to $1 million a day if it turns out that developers encourage landowners along the pipeline route to cut down trees this year before receiving state permits. The Attorney General's office conducted a two-month investigation of the pipeline, finding evidence of tree cutting, road building, heavy equipment use in the state-protected streams and wetlands. Read the full story in Capital Confidential, a Times Union blog. National Weather Service in Albany predicts a 80% chance of showers and thunderstorms Saturday and Saturday night, with a high near 66 and a low around 39. Sunday, there's a 20% chance of showers, a high near 49 and a low around 34. Monday should be mostly sunny with a high near 53. You're listening to 90.7 WGXC Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported creative community radio.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines. Gizmodo pulls back the curtain on the supposedly neutral computer-based algorithm of trending news on Facebook, which turns out to be none of those things. The site interviewed several former contract workers for Facebook who were curators chosen to pick which stories Facebook features as trending news, who said they were told to increase the profile of certain stories and to ignore others that were popular among users. Quote, in other words, Facebook's news section operates like a traditional newsroom, reflecting the biases of its workers and the institutional imperatives of the corporation. Imposing human editorial values onto the list of topics an algorithm spits out is by no means a bad thing, but it is in stark contrast to the company's claims that the trending module simply lists, quote, topics that have recently become popular on Facebook, unquote. Gizmodo wrote, the story's allegations that conservative news was played down by Facebook seem less impressive. One anonymous former Facebook news curator says, quote, I'd come on shift and I'd discover that CPAC or Mitt Romney or Glenn Beck or popular conservative topics wouldn't be trending because either the curator didn't recognize the news topic or it was like they had a bias against Ted Cruz, unquote. That sounds like a problem in most any newsroom, not particular to Facebook. Another quote says, quote, every once in a while, a red state or conservative news source would have a story, but we would have to go and find the same story from a more neutral outlet that wasn't as biased, unquote. Did they follow the same procedure for first sources from the far left? Probably the curators searched for more sources and sources they knew and could trust, just like regular journalists. Facebook's news curation may have a bias against conservative news and tend towards mainstream sources and stories, just like many other news outlets, and that part of the story seems very accurate. See the full story in Gizmodo. Boing Boing reports that the U.S. Navy and the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, now have a radio-controlled drone for the seas. The Navy's first ship without an onboard crew is a 132-foot anti-submarine warfare continuous trail unmanned vessel called the Sea Hunter, which cost around $120 million to build. The military claims new additions will only cost $20 million each and will be used to track enemy submarines and will be tested off the California coast the next 2 years, starting with onboard personnel, just in case some sort of failure occurs over the radio waves. This is Tom Rowe for Wavefarm Radio and WGXC. Slate reports that last week, four U.S. senators sent a letter critical of the Connect Home program that is supposed to help rural Americans get broadband internet service to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which runs Connect Home. Senators Shelley Moore Capito, Republican from West Virginia, Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat from New York, Angus King, Independent from Maine, and Jean Shaheen, Democrat from New Hampshire, complained about the quality of the internet that Connect Home provides. Connect Home sets up 4 megabits per second download and 1 megabits per second upload as broadband, though the Federal Communications Commission recently updated those figures to 25 megabits per second download speed and 3 megabits per second upload speed in January 2015. Quote, federal policymakers must ensure that taxpayer-supported infrastructure is sufficiently robust to handle demand. It is not only a matter of fairness that rural Americans can fully utilize broadband-enabled resources, but also a matter of ensuring that taxpayers are receiving the full economic development return on their investments, unquote, the senators wrote to the Agriculture Department. The FCC's Lifeline program for low-income Americans provides 10 megabits per second downloads. Most government internet subsidies, Slate reports, set aside $9.25 per household for broadband, which won't get anyone blazing internet speeds. This is Tom Rowe for Wavefarm Radio and WGXC. The New York Times reported that Michael Ratner, the civil liberties lawyer who also hosted the Law and Disorder radio show, which originated on WBAI and airs on WGXC at 10 a.m. Mondays, died May 11th from complications of cancer, according to his brother Bruce, the property developer and an owner of the Brooklyn Nets. Ratner, 72, may be best known for successfully challenging the United States government's detention of terrorism suspects at Guantanamo Bay without judicial review. He also headed the Center for Constitutional Rights and sued New York City to end wholesale stop-and-frisk policing.
This is Law and Disorder.
Law and Disorder with co-host Heidi Boghossian and Michael Stephen Smith. It's a weekly syndicated radio program discussing access to rare, on the radio, legal perspectives on issues concerning civil liberties, privacy, the right to dissent, and torture. I'm Tom Rowe for Wavefarm Radio and WGXC. Gizmodo reports that Senator Ron Wyden will introduce legislation next week that would roll back the government's new broader hacking power granted by the Supreme Court in April. The Rule 41 allows federal judges to grant warrants to the FBI to use what they call network investigative techniques. Anyone who has had their computer invaded would call that malware. The government can use that malware on 10 or 10,000 computers, no matter the jurisdiction of those computers, because of the rule. And the rule also allows judges to give warrants to search the computers of victims of cybercrime, even if that person isn't a suspect. Quote, by compromising computer systems, it could leave it open to other attackers. What if the government has to turn off the computer's protections to search it, unquote, Wyden told Gizmodo. Quote, so if the government is out there turning off millions of security features in order to search computers, my view is that there could be some serious security threats, unquote. Wyden's legislation will be just one sentence, saying that the changes to Rule 41 will not go into effect. Congress has 6 months to pass such a measure before the rule change takes effect. This is Tom Rowe for Waveform Radio and WGXC. TechCrunch reports that just about the only problem with the Periscope app is that the broadcasts are deleted after 24 hours. So on May 4th, the company fixed that, starting with saving any broadcast with a hashtag save in their titles. The app lets anyone with a Twitter account stream video through their cell phones through a very simple interface. Now the company is developing controls for saving recordings for various periods of time, but not forever. Periscope and through Twitter, its 300 million possible users are trying to compete with the 1.6 billion users, possible broadcasters through Facebook Live. I'm Tom Rowe for Waveform Radio and WGXC.
All Together Now, the 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday newscast for Greene and Columbia Counties is looking for contributors. If you have an idea for a regular or irregular segment, or if you want to interview the public at a local event or write stories for the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org, send an email to info@WGXC.org. All Together Now. All Together Now airs Monday through Saturday, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM in Greene and Columbia Counties and WOOC LP 105.3 FM in Troy.
We'll begin this week's rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the frigid Northwest Arkansas studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this week's rain report. For many hams nationwide, spring is the unofficial beginning of the hamfest season. If you've been to a local hamfest, you have seen a piece of Americana. As some of you hear the following op-ed piece from the Rain Archives, the highways and byways into and out of Dayton, Ohio, will be clogged with those who take in the Dayton Hamvention, May 20th, 21st, and 22nd, the hamfest of hamfests that draws more than 20,000 attendees from around the world. Next weekend, as we go to press. More than 20 years ago, a Chicago-area ham, Oren Brand, K9KEJ, put his many years of hamfesting to paper. As you listen to his thoughts, see if you don't find yourself grudgingly agreeing with Oren's observations about what he called the hamfest mentality.
Right at the outset, I will qualify this dissertation by telling you I've been a ham operator since 1957. And I've managed to dabble with many of the facets of our hobby. I've been fortunate to partake in slow and fast scan television, RTTY, AM, SSB, FM, CW, phase modulation, moon bounce, microwave, HF, VHF, UHF, DX, rag chewing, you name it. No packet, though. I've even toyed with the idea of packet, but haven't done it. But figured I'd spend enough time in front of a computer screen all day as it is. And over the years, I've discovered ham radio has something for everyone, especially for those folks who love to go to ham fests. What? Have I hit a nerve? I'll never forget how I felt at my first ham fest back in the 50s. Don't try to figure out how old I am. I don't even know where it was, except that it was perhaps someplace in central Illinois. There were food stands selling delicious barbecue ribs, Italian beef, hamburgers, fresh sweet corn, and other assorted foodstuffs every normal kid would die for in those days. You could gaze upon row after row of folding tables set up like little communities, almost like dominoes. Looking back now, that first hamfest experience reminds me of town festivals and celebrations where everyone shows up. Each table held the promise of some kind of adventure. There was a table with used night kits from Allied Radio in Chicago. Stuff like an ocean hopper and space banner super regen receiver. There was a table full of old Heath kits. There were helicrafters, S-38s of various model designations. You know, the S-38, the S-38C, D, E, the whole shot. There were a lot of old HROs. A few Mint Collins receivers, some WRL Globe gear, maybe a Globe Chief 90A or a Globe Scout 65 or a Globe Champ 300. Many of my friends and I were novices, while also soon after got a tech license to go along with a novice ticket. None of us ever wanted to be labeled as KN9s. Being a K9 brought us respect, despite the fact that hams in their 30s and 40s still called us short pants. Well, anyway, back to the Hamfest tables and the people who set up all that gear. I remember several Chicago-area guys with tables loaded with Army surplus stuff. Gear like the command sets, BC-458s, 454s, 455s, 348Qs, 1625s. They filled the tables. Dynamotors, PE-103s, they were converted to run this 24-volt stuff. And if it didn't smell of mildew, my friends, it wasn't authentic. The wild thing was that back then, there was no such thing as a handy-talkie. The closest thing to it was a 2-meter transceiver made by the Springfield Company that came with a telephone handset, real classy. Try lugging that thing around. As the years went by, the complexion of some of the gear changed somewhat. You could still see a National NC-300 or two, maybe a few Heathkit AT-20s or DX-35s, and hopefully a DX-40 or two, but never a famous DX-100, heaven forbid. Those infamous Collins KWS-1s were always sold in private deals, as were the Johnson Viking Thunderbolt kilowatts or Viking Rangers and Valiants. But wait! The lights flash, the earth shakes, and we're transformed through years of strife and upheaval. And it's now 1993. And wait a minute. Hold it. What's that? What's that stuff on the table over there? At the Corn Dancers Hamfest. My God, it's an old command set. Complete. With its built-in antenna tuner, so anyone can load up a wire fence or even a screen. Why, there's even a set of extra 1625 tubes. Shh, don't tell anybody. Will you look at that? That's the same guy. The same guy, the same clown, selling that same junk from the late 50s and 60s. He's still alive, still around. I'm sure many of you experience similar happenings. When some of my ham friends and I get together for an evening of dinner and conversation, we often comment that even if any of us haven't attended a ham fest for, say, 20 years or so, we'll still find the same exact people trying to hawk their wares. And we firmly believe that much of that junk on their tables is the same exact stuff that we saw back when we were kids. Now, don't go and get your juices all soured up now about these comments. It's true, and you know it, if you've been around a while. And isn't it amazing how hamfests bring out some of the more, let's say, unusual of our fraternity? I mean, just a couple of years ago, I attended one near Chicago, and sure enough, there they were. A lot of real old-timers I saw when I was a kid, still wearing their hard hats. Ugh, those monster hard hats. Crumbling civil defense stickers affixed to the front. There they were, the ones with the old GE, or tongues-all pocket protectors, with six pens, four pencils, and a metal protractor tucked away. just in case they need to make an accurate measurement of someone's life. My friend and I also noticed that Hamfest seemed to attract the unwashed, unclean, and oftentimes the outrageous of our fellow amateurs. You will definitely see lots of people with huge bellies, rotting teeth, wearing sweat-stained t-shirts that only cover halfway down while also broadcasting bad breath and the worst BO ever. There are a salt of the earth folks who will plunk down 2 G's for some ultra new gear while their kids pick lice out of their hair. Somewhere else, things will be different. But my friends, nowhere else in the world will you see a human being with 3 handy talkies on his person, with 2 clip-on speaker mics, along with 2 earphones, 1 for each ear. I honestly saw one clown with 4 HTs all going off at once. "Get over here quick," he yelled into his mini mic. "I think I can get a mint set of Gonsa twins for you off this table I'm in front of for practically nothing." And then someone calls out my name and call letters. And my deepest and darkest fears begin to surface. Someone recognizes me after all. Uh-oh. No, it can't be. He comes running up to me in bib overalls, cowhide boots, 4 pounds of mud and maybe manure under his fingernails, a beard ZZ Top members would love to have, and an extended hand to me. That hand, by the way, probably hasn't had an intimate relationship with a bar of soap in the last 25 years. "Glad to see you, old buddy," he yells over the noise of his dual band talkie. "What you doing here?" Not wanting to completely insult him, I only shake part of his hand, the fingertips, I believe, to be more sanitized than the rest. "I came to see if time really did stand still, as some people claim it does at Hamfest," I explained. And then I saw it out of the corner of my eye, a flash, a ray of sun glancing off its smooth, shiny exterior. Like a whoosh. A chrome, vibroplex, semi-auto bug, the Rolls-Royce of CW people worldwide. A long time ago. No electronics here, just straight fist pounding. 599, good luck in the contest, 73. I left this guy in mid-sentence and ran across the dirt path to the table with a guy wearing the old white hard hat. "How much?" I inquired. $300 because it's got new jeweled movements in it," he replied, not being affected by my teary eyes. All right," he then mumbled. "I'll give it to you for $200, and that's that." All the way home, my car smelled of mildew, a reminder I had reacquired some great artifact from my past. And at the same time, understanding I truly visited a place where time warps are for real and the ghosts of ham operators past are alive and well, still selling their junk to kids just like me. Happy scavenging. This is Oren, K9KEJ, for Rain.
The thoughts and musings of an old-timer, Oren Brand, K9KEJ, about what he termed Hamfest mentality, written for Rain more than 20 years ago. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2016 Rain. All rights reserved. Now for all those on the road to, or shortly to be, to the Dayton Hamvention, May 20th, 21st, and 22nd in Dayton, Ohio's Hera Arena, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from all those connected with these Rain reports. And if you hear this before you get to the Hamvention, be sure to put the Rain and Gateway 160-meter radio newsletter booth in your agenda. Inside booth 329. You just might be interviewed. The Rain Report is available 24/7 on therainreport.com, via Twitter at The Rain Report, and somewhere on iTunes.
Roseanne Cash is at Club Helsinki Saturday.
Heartbeat. on some horizon, just too far away to see. Radio operator, there are still messages to send from the future, from the present.
Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global, unembedded, independent, international investigative news hour, broadcasting live every weekday morning at 8 here on WGXC 90.7 FM in Greene and Columbia counties.
I'm Philip Gray, one of the contributors to All Together Now. Listen to Democracy Now! In the morning and All Together Now! In the evening, WGXC's collaborative hour-long news show at 6 p.m., featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported hands-on radio.
Democracy Now! At 8.
All Together Now! At 6 p.m.
Here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Turn out or tune in to Amy Goodman, the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, Saturday, May 21st. She'll be there to help celebrate the start of WOOCLP, new low-power radio station run out of the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Tune in or turn out for a talk from Amy Goodman, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, Saturday, May 21st, in Troy and live on WGXC 90.7 FM in Greene and Columbia counties.
From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL Audio News for Friday, May 13th, 2016. This program is produced by the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, and features news highlights compiled from the ARRL letter, found on the web at arrl.org. I'm Sean Kutzko, KX9X. In this week's report, ARRL ham aid gear is shipped to Ecuador to support earthquake relief and recovery. Canadian radio amateurs assist in Alberta wildfire emergency evacuations, and a rare DeForest Audion tube is donated to ARRL. Those stories and others, plus Bruce Page, KK5DO, with this week's satellite update, all coming up now.
Hi, I'm ARRL member Ron Oshu, KO0Z, of Girard, Illinois, and you're listening to ARRL Audio News.
Five boxes of Ham-Aid amateur radio equipment, some 400 pounds in all, left ARRL headquarters on May 4th, bound for the Guayaquil Radio Club in Ecuador. The radio equipment will help to support relief and recovery efforts underway in the wake of a magnitude 7.8 earthquake that struck the South American nation on April 16th. Valued at more than $7,500, the equipment will provide reliable communication in areas where the telecommunications infrastructure suffered damage. ARRL Emergency Preparedness Manager Mike Corey, KI1U, said the recovery process can be lengthy, and radio amateurs in the affected area need repeaters, antennas, supports, and other things to be able to help those disrupted by disaster. This is what Ham-Aid is for, to enable amateurs to effectively respond following a disaster to help their communities through the recovery process, he said. Most earthquake damage occurred in the Guayaquil and Puerto Viejo areas. Some structures in Puerto Viejo suffered severe damage, with many victims buried in the rubble of collapsed buildings and homes. In the immediate aftermath of the disaster, electrical power and commercial telecommunication systems were either destroyed or disrupted, and many roads were rendered impassable because of earthquake rubble. Corey noted that while most Ham-Aid deployments have been stateside, the opportunity arose to assist with the International Disaster Relief effort through the Guayaquil Radio Club. ARRL CEO Tom Gallagher, NY2RF, said, "For more than 100 years, when there is a need, we can use our communication and electronics expertise to give back. Amateur radio answers the call when and where needed." James Wedby, N0ECN of Gladstone, Missouri, has petitioned the FCC to designate Morse or radio telegraphy amateur radio band segments as symbol communication subbands. The FCC has invited comments on his petition for rulemaking, RM11769, filed on May 2nd. Arguing that retaining the current regime of legacy CW bands has proven grossly inefficient, Wedby said he'd like to see the FCC delete all privilege restrictions that limit any part of the amateur radio spectrum to Morse code to the exclusion of other modes. Wedby characterized CW-only subbands as an excessive regulatory constraint as well as a poor use of the spectrum concerned. He proposed that the FCC's Part 97 rules reflect the ultimate form of communication reproduced at the receiving end. As he explained it, his regulatory scheme would break down modes into three categories: symbol communication mode, for CW, digital, and other emission modes that reproduce a discrete symbol on the receiving end; voice mode; and image mode. Continuing regulation by specific emission designator is proving to be onerous with changes to the state of the art, Wedby said. Accordingly, to continue developing the state of the art in radio communications, amateur radio needs to clearly get away from regulating in that fashion and return to consideration of what the receiving end of the communication reproduces. Commenters have 30 days to respond to Wedby's petition. A wildfire in Alberta, Canada, that began unremarkably on May 1st, soon ballooned into a major, fast-moving conflagration, owing to hot, dry weather, high winds, and low humidity, creating a disaster of historic proportions. The flames caused extensive property damage and led to the evacuation of the entire population of Fort McMurray in the heart of Canada's oil sands country. While the wildfire emergency never became a communications event, prompting an ARES activation, Radio Amateurs of Canada said radio amateurs on the ground helped other organizations such as the Red Cross. Alberta Section Manager Gary Jacobs, VE6CIA, reported on May 5th that Alberta ARES went on standby to provide VHF-UHF linking, although there was no HF activity due to the fact that Fort McMurray had been evacuated. According to the Amateur Radio Coalition, a national ham radio fan page on Facebook, the Provincial Emergency Radio Communications Service was put on standby to staff the radio room and to establish communication into Fort McMurray, and the club in Fort McMurray was staffing its local emergency communications center in case communications failed. Online, via podcast, and on repeaters around the world, you're listening to ARRL Audio News. Now with this week's satellite update, here's Bruce Page, KK5DO.
This week, AMPSAT Vice President of Engineering Jerry Buxton, N0JY, said that January 20th, 2017 is the planned launch date for RAD-FXSAT, that's Fox 1B, CubeSat. This CubeSat will fly with the Vanderbilt University radiation experiments. RAD-FXSAT pre-launch frequencies are as follows. The uplink, 435.250 MHz FM with a 67.0 Hz CTCSS tone. Downlink, 145.960 MHz FM. You can find the latest version of the Fox One operating guide at AMPSAT.org. AMPSAT pioneered the concept of small satellites in low orbits. AMPSAT's Project Fox consists of a series of CubeSats that will provide FM transponders with a 70-centimeter uplink with a 2-meter downlink that will match the ground performance of previous FM satellites. Thanks to the AMPSAT News Service and Jerry and 0JY for this story. This is Bruce Page, KK5DO, for the ARRL Audio News.
Technical papers are being solicited for presentation at the 35th Annual ARRL Tapper Digital Communications Conference, September 16th through the 18th in St. Petersburg, Florida. Papers will also be published in the conference proceedings. Authors do not need to attend the conference to have their papers included in the proceedings. The conference is an international forum for technically minded radio amateurs to meet and present new ideas and techniques. Paper and presentation topic areas include, but are not limited to, software-defined radio, digital voice, digital satellite communication, digital signal processing, global positioning systems, APRS, Linux in amateur radio, and internet operability with amateur radio networks. Papers should be submitted to ARRL no later than July 31st. Congratulations to Larry Burke, K5RK, the first radio amateur to confirm 400 of the 484 eligible NPS units for national parks on the air. As of May 11th, Larry had 402 units confirmed. Five other NPOTA participants have more than 390 confirmed, and 18 hams have more than 350 units confirmed. There have now been more than 5,100 activations of NPS units in 2016, resulting in 333,000 contacts. There will be plenty of NPOTA-themed activity at the Dayton Hamvention May 20th through the 22nd. Look for the NPOTA booth in the ARRL Expo area, and be sure to attend the NPOTA Forum on Saturday at 9:15 a.m. 30 NPOTA activations are on the calendar from May 12th through the 19th, including Oregon Caves National Monument in Oregon and the Whitman Mission National Historic Site in Washington. Details about these and other upcoming activations can be found on the NPOTA Activations Calendar. ARRL has an opportunity for those traveling to the Dayton Hamvention who want to activate an NPS unit for national parks on the air. The League has secured an operating permit with the Dayton Aviation Heritage National Historical Park in downtown Dayton. The special NPOTA activity will be available for visiting operators to enjoy activating an NPOTA unit without having to bring their own gear. The event will run from Friday, May 20th until Sunday, May 22nd at the Wright-Dunbar Interpretive Center. Operations will run from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, and 9 a.m. until noon on Sunday. Dayton Aviation Heritage National Historical Park is excited to partner with ARRL for a National Parks on the Air event during Dayton Hamvention 2016, said Park Ranger Ryan Qualls. ARRL's legacy of experimentation, education, and public service is in concert with the National Park Service's mission. ARRL Ohio Section Affiliated Club Coordinator John Myers, KD8MQ, is coordinating on-site operations for the event. He is looking for volunteers on Friday and Saturday who would be able to help visiting operators and explain NPOTA and amateur radio to non-ham park visitors. Contact him to volunteer or to sign up for a 15-minute operating slot. All slots are available on a first-come, first-served basis, and all operators are limited to one slot to make this opportunity available to as many visitors as possible. Vibroplex is donating antenna masts and hardware to the effort, and ARRL is providing the equipment. The Wright-Dunbar Interpretive Center is located at 16 South William Street in downtown Dayton.
Hi, I'm ARRL member Tom Gallagher, NY2RF of West Palm Beach, Florida, and you're listening to ARRL Audio News.
A major donation from noted DXer Kan Mitsugushi JA1BK to the ARRL Second Century campaign is supporting a new ARRL program to preserve paper de-expedition logs. Earning from his generous gift funded creation and management of the DX Log Archive, which will serve as a repository of paper DX logs of rare and significant de-expeditions that took place prior to the advent of computer logging, as well as of certain other de-expedition artifacts. Pre-1990 logs are the most sought after. The archive is also seeking paper logs from stations whose operators resided in interesting or rare places, as well as any logs before 1930. Logs accepted for the archive will be inventoried, preserved, stored, and made available to confirm those long-ago contacts. The archive also welcomes de-expedition artifacts or documents such as licenses, landing permits, ship logs, and blank QSL cards. And finally, ARRL member Walt Bain, W4LTU, has donated a rare DeForest round bulb Audion vacuum tube to the league. Radio pioneer Lee DeForest filed his first patent for the Audion in 1907, describing it as a detector of sound, and he is generally credited with having invented the vacuum tube. First used as the detector in the DeForest Audion receiver, the Audion subsequently was heralded as the world's first electronic amplifying device. ARRL lab test engineer Bob Allison, WB1GCM, who curates the league's museum collection, accepted the Audion and had it installed on the league's own DeForest Audion receiver, which lacked a tube. Each year, we have about 2,000 visitors to the lab. They will get to see that tube, Allison said. Over time, vacuum tubes supplanted mineral detectors in radio receivers, although in a what-goes-around-comes-around turn of events, solid-state devices called transistors replaced the vacuum tube in the 1950s and 1960s. Today's iPhones have the equivalent of 2 billion transistors packed inside. That concludes ARRL Audio News for this week. Our thanks to all contributors to this week's report. ARRL Audio News is produced by the American Radio Relay League, the National Association for Amateur Radio. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or a comment about ARRL Audio News, email us at audionews@arrl.org. This program is copyright 2016 ARRL. All rights reserved. Until next week, I'm Sean Kutzko, KX9X 73, and thanks for listening.
News Service Weekend Newscast. I'm Veronica Carter. Here's what's making news. The White House is defending new rules for transgenders who want to use public restrooms. Big drug maker doesn't want its products used in lethal injections, and you have a chance to howl with the wolves. In the news today, the White House is defending new transgender bathroom guidelines. White House spokesman Josh Earnest called it an issue of common sense.
You can't discriminate against people because of their gender identity. You can't force people with a specific gender identity to use a different facility. That's discriminating against them.
Government says public schools should allow transgender students to use bathrooms of their choice. Attorney General Loretta Lynch wrote a letter to public schools saying there's no room in public schools for discrimination of any kind. Schools that don't comply with the new guidelines could risk losing federal funding. Texas's lieutenant governor calls it blackmail. He also accused the Obama administration of harassment and bullying. Well, it's a visit that's sure to make history. President Obama plans to become the first U.S. president to visit Hiroshima, Japan since the bombing.
The White House says Obama will not apologize for the decision to drop the atomic bomb in 1945. Arnie Alpert with the American Friends Service Committee of New Hampshire says Obama has gotten off track of his original goal to rid the world of nuclear weapons, and he hopes the president will use the visit to get back on track.
We would like to see that he not go empty-handed, but that he go to Japan with specific steps that the United States is going to take that leads us in that direction.
Obama was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2009 in recognition of his nuclear nonproliferation efforts. Cole Harrison is active on the issue in New England with the group Massachusetts Peace Action. He says he does not want to prejudge what Obama might say later this month, but he does know the U.S. is spending plenty on the nuclear arsenal.
The United States, under his administration, is spending $1 trillion to modernize our nuclear weapons. So they perceive us as a threat, and we have to stop this and go for nuclear disarmament instead of one-upmanship.
On May 27th, Obama plans to join Japan's prime minister on a tour of the site of the world's first nuclear bombing. More on the web at peace-action.org. I'm Mike Clifford.
Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders says he is in the race until the end. At a rally in Bismarck, Sanders said the plan is to win as many delegates as possible leading up to the Democratic convention. He said if they do that, they can go to the convention in Philadelphia with more delegates than Hillary Clinton. Sanders says no matter who wins, everyone agrees the likely Republican nominee, Donald Trump, must not be elected president. Pfizer is taking steps to ensure that its products are not used in lethal injections. New York Times reports the pharmaceutical giant is going to impose wide-ranging controls over the distribution of the drugs used in executions. The move closes off the last remaining open market source of the lethal injection drugs. A former science teacher who's been promoting the virtues of the McDonald's diet won't be visiting schools any longer. Fast food chain says they pulled the plug on the presentations by John Cisna to students. His book, My McDonald's Diet, How I Lost 37 Pounds in 90 Days and Became a Viral Sensation, has been sharply criticized by teachers, parents, and public health advocates. McDonald's says Cisna will remain as a brand ambassador focusing on community events, but he won't be appearing at schools anymore. While you're taking a family vacation this summer, there's a place for animal lovers that you may not know about. A couple of wolf pups have gotten a lot of attention after becoming the first to be born in captivity and placed in a den in the wild. Pups were taken to New Mexico for release shortly after being born at the Endangered Wolf Center in St. Louis, where Regina Masati is director of animal care. She says there are only 97 Mexican gray wolves, and in order for them to survive, what they call cross-fostering is necessary.
If you have low genetic variability, it can lead to things like disease, deformities, like with any species, including humans, you want to have increased genetic variability to keep the population strong and healthy.
Biologists won't know for several months whether the transferred pups survived or not. The Endangered Wolf Center was founded in 1971 by Marlon Perkins of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom fame. Masati says even though it's been in St. Louis for nearly 50 years, not many people know about the center. Something else they don't know about is the red wolf. It's also at the Endangered Wolf Center. Used to roam the southeastern United States, but it's now only in North Carolina, and there are only 40 of them left.
Most people don't even know the red wolf exists, let alone that it's an American treasure. And what I mean by that is it literally can't be found in any other country. So it's been a big priority of ours.
There are a total of 6 different wolf species at the center. It is open to the public. Masati said you can take a tour and even howl with the wolves if you want to. Also for nature lovers, you might want to check out North Carolina's Butterfly Highway.
The project began a year ago in the Charlotte area as an effort to increase the network of pollinator habitats in the community and make it easier for butterflies and other pollen-reliant insects to flourish. Well supported by the North Carolina Wildlife Federation, the project is led by Angelique Yarding.
Instead of it just being one person doing one thing, you can start to see the bigger picture of how all of us working together can actually create large change for pollinators and butterflies.
The Butterfly Highway began with 70 sites in the pilot project. In the past 2 months, it has expanded statewide to 500 sites. If you'd like to participate, there is no minimum size for a garden as long as it meets the criteria and provides food and habitat for native insects and wildlife. Once a garden is registered, participants are eligible to purchase a Butterfly Highway sign for $25 to be displayed at their home, school, farm, or business. This is Stephanie Carson reporting.
You're up to date. I'm Veronica Carter. For Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Tamara with some of the events on the WGXC community calendar. You can go to the WGXC.org website, and right at the top of the page, there's an add an event button. You can add an event to the community calendar, and folks like me will read it on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org in the community calendar. Cliverick Library has a book sale Sunday, May 15th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And the Alana State Historic Site is hosting Deep Air Poetry with artist Matthew Friday and poet Kara Benson from 1 to 3 p.m. Sunday, May 15th. Gideon's Knot is still going at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill Sunday, May 15th at 2 p.m. And the Lazarus Project has a show at the Inky Edition Space in Hudson near the train station with Samsa Pertola, Jordan Walker, Laura Sumner, and Tim Kolowski. That's at 7 p.m. Sunday, May 15th. Rip Van Winkle Amateur Radio Club has its monthly meeting at the Churchtown Firehouse in Churchtown in Columbia County at 7 p.m. It's the monthly meeting for the Columbia and Greene County Amateur Radio Society. Greenville has a town meeting on Monday at 7 p.m. at the Greenville Town Hall. Stephen Jenkinson and Linda Weintraub perform and screen their film at Inky Editions Monday, May 16th at 7 p.m. School budget votes are throughout the area on Tuesday, May 17th. Check your local schools for listings, but it's important to vote in school elections Tuesday, May 17th. Alana State Historic Site also holds a healthy hike that day at 5:30 p.m. WGXC has a Community Programming Advisory Committee meeting Tuesday, May 17th at the Hudson Studio, 704 Columbia Street on the second floor in Hudson. Hunter has a town board meeting on Tuesday, May 17th at 7 p.m., and Hudson has its Common Council meeting at 7 p.m. Tuesday, May 17th. Durham has its town meeting at 7:30 p.m. Tuesday, May 17th. Those are just some of the events on the WGXC community calendar. Go to WGXC.org to find out more.
Next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Us Girls and She Devils are at Half Moon in Hudson, Saturday, May 14th. This is Window Shades from the U.S. Girls.